My name is Dr. Ethel Tungohun. I'm a writer, a researcher, an associate professor of politics, and an activist. This is Academic Antis. In November 2023, a campaign of repression against expressions of Palestine solidarity started to accelerate in colleges and universities across North America. Student groups, faculty, and staff were increasingly surveilled, policed, and targeted with spurious charges of anti-Semitism if they dared to voice support for Palestine. In some cases, senior university officials suspended faculty members, students, and staff for being part of Palestine solidarity protests, as we have talked about extensively in this podcast. The University of Alberta is no exception. UofA faculty, staff, and students who expressed support for Palestine were actively targeted. These targeted harassment campaigns were also directed towards staff and volunteers at the University of Alberta Sexual Assault Center. They were harassed online, in person, and via phone calls after a post about a student-organized Palestine solidarity event was shared on the center's Instagram page. In this episode of Academic Antis, we talked to three core staff members of the center who were targeted and fired from their jobs on January 23 of this year in an investigation led by senior administrators that was focused on identifying any expression of solidarity with Palestinians by these staff members. We talk about the toll that this has taken, the reality that academic staff don't enjoy the same types of protections as faculty members, and how uncaring and callous university senior administrators can be. Please have a listen. With us today are three amazing individuals who have been talking about their experiences of what just happened at the University of Alberta Sexual Assault Center. Before diving into it, I will ask our guests to introduce themselves. So Kit, do you want to go first?
Yeah, thank you. So my name is Kit Rempel. My pronouns are they and them or she and her. And I am a former staff member of the University of Alberta Sexual Assault Center. I was a student at the U of A, and throughout my time as a student, I volunteered with the center. I was a volunteer for, I think, almost 5 years, and I've been a staff member for about 4 years. So a long time with the center. I filled a lot of roles. I supported folks. I acted as an educator. I mentored volunteers. Pretty much, any hat that you could fill at the center, I pretty much filled it, other than, of course, being the director. But yeah, long time, and I learned a lot, and really, yeah, I'm grateful to the time I spent at the center. But yeah, thanks for having us on the podcast.
Hi there. thank you again for having us on. My name is Saba Kidane, and I am also a former employee. I was an education program coordinator, education program co-coordinator with Kit at the U of A Sexual Assault Center. Previously, I'm an alumna from the University of Alberta a very long time ago, closer to like 10, 15 years ago. But I had previously worked in anti-sexual violence work, doing like facilitation mainly with youth, but I've worked with people of all different ages and different, backgrounds. I would work with companies or community groups or schools, just teaching about anti-sexual violence, consent, things of that nature. But I've worked in the nonprofit sphere for a very long time. So anyone who's worked in nonprofits for a long time probably knows the struggle of doing a bunch of different jobs. But yeah, I had only been with the University of Alberta Sexual Assault Center for 2 years. 2 years, two and a half years, yeah.
Thank you. And Wen?
Hi, yeah, my name is Wen. I'm Wen Chan. I use they, she pronouns. I'm the former crisis intervention program coordinator at the center. But yeah, like Kit, I volunteered when I was a student at the U of A too for around 4 years maybe. And it's only been like a year and a half working at the center. But I, looking back on my university life, I think the center was like one of the best parts of my university experience, just like community, and the work was so meaningful. So I am very angry and sad about what has happened to the center. But thank you for having us on and giving us the space to kind of talk about this.
Absolutely. And I think one thing that makes me even angrier is that everything that has happened to you all as staff members, you know, needs to be recognized by other members of the university community, right? Thus far on Academic Antis, we focus on faculty members facing reprisal. We focus on students facing reprisal, but we haven't talked about staff who were facing reprisal. But before we kind of jump in to unpacking what happened to all of you in the UFA Sexual Assault Center, can you tell us about why the Sexual Assault Center at the University of Alberta is such a crucial space? Saba, when we were talking about this a few weeks ago, one thing that you said really struck out. You said, we never needed the university. The university needed us. The university needed the Sexual Assault Center. So can we talk a little bit about the work that the center does? And I know when you said that you had some thoughts on this as well, if you wanted to start us off.
Yeah, definitely. Maybe to start a little bit of background of the center, there's a few sexual assault centers in Edmonton and the area around Edmonton, but the U of A Sexual Assault Center, I'll just call it like the center from now on, is like Edmonton's only drop-in crisis intervention center. So folks can come in, whether they're U of A community, U of A affiliated or not, doesn't matter, we don't check. It's like an anonymous space, anonymous and confidential. So being the only drop-in center, having it be closed is so devastating for so many people who have been impacted by sexual violence. We did like many things beyond providing support to these folks. We provided like that support, crisis intervention support, advocacy, like within the university and other systems. Like sometimes folks are involved in legal things, or there's lots of bureaucracy in the university, so helping with that a little. And we also accompanied folks to appointments or any hearings they had, or just whatever way we could be supportive. And we also offered like more specialized things in the university, like I mentioned, like academic modifications. And specifically, Saba and Kit's role was providing educational opportunities for like students, staff, and faculty, which was such a huge part in the university's plan for preventing sexual violence. And yeah, many folks on campus came to us when thinking through how, like how to respond to disclosures of sexual violence, especially like professors and other staff. It's very common that students experience sexual violence. So having this service be kind of ripped away is, yeah, just horrible. And I guess in terms of the bigger support structure at U of A, we were just part of that.
I guess one last thing I'll add is that I'm referencing what you mentioned, Ethel, around what I said in our conversation previously around, like, we never needed the university. The university needed us. They needed the Sexual Assault Center. Was that, you know, the U of A Sexual Assault Center was started 30 years ago by students. The university didn't make it happen. Students and faculty and people on campus who were survivors and needed a safe place for survivors to go to talk to somebody in a way that was confidential and safe and didn't pose like even further risks for harm. It was a grassroots center built up by themselves. It was eventually incorporated into a student service over the years. You know, it's a 30-year legacy of the center, but it started because there were gaps in the university's sexual violence response, and those gaps remain to this day. So survivors never needed, you know, university admin with empty promises. They always did it for themselves, but they shouldn't have to, which is the space and the ethos that I think all of us as staff really, really got from the wonderful leadership that we had and the relationships that we built with each other and our clients and the volunteers.
Everything both of you said is so important to underscore. The fact that this response happened means that there is now a gap in terms of who's providing the support, not just to students, but to educators, right? Who need to understand, you know, the whole, who need to have the vocabulary to understand what's happening in the case of sexual violence, right? I'm just shaking my head. This is appalling. Let's now hone in on what happened after October 7, 2023. We would have contextualized it, you know, in the intro, but I want us to kind of dive in and ask, you know, I know that y'all have been experiencing targeting and harassment. Can you talk a little bit about that and also some of the dynamics surrounding silencing?
So I'll start just briefly talking about the targeting and harassment that we experienced. So it's important to note that we didn't experience any targeting directly after, you know, October 7th, 2023. The harassment against the center and us as staff and other members of staff at the U of A Sexual Assault Center actually started in early November. Really, it seems to have been a concerted, targeted harassment campaign centered around the fact that our center, we shared like one Instagram post in support of a student walkout, a student organized walkout in support of a ceasefire and in support of you know, the Palestinian people. So after this one post in early November on Instagram, just giving people information on like, hey, if you want to participate in the walkout, this is the info. Something very normal that we would do for any other cause that aligned with our values. You know, our center, I'm going to use past tense, which feels really strange, but was anti-oppressive, you know, abolitionist, you know, and pro-survivor, a radical feminist, you know, organization, as we have to be doing the work that we do, because we so often would have, you know, people come in and be afraid of what they could talk about, what they couldn't talk about, thinking that we might force them to, you know, report or something of that nature, which is the response that a lot of people tend to get. So our center is very much like, hey, survivors, we're survivor centered. If people, you know, want to report, don't want to report, that's up to them. We can only listen, support, and guide. So yeah, the targeting harassment really seemed centered around painting us as an unsafe place for Jewish students, Jewish faculty, Jewish people in general. At some points, people specifically were like emailing university admin, as far as I know, painting us as being unsafe for Jewish females. Like, that was the language being used, which was really strange. So we received a lot of targeted harassment on in person. We had people come in, try and make a scene at a sexual assault center, which common sense should tell you is never the move. That's never okay. You should never feel safe to scare clients and staff at a sexual assault center. We received harassment over the internet. So on Twitter, I received screenshots, and in all other like social media, I received screenshots from, you know, friends that I hadn't heard of or heard from in like 3 years, who were like, hey, is this you? And it would be like a screenshot of my face and my name along with other staff members on Twitter saying that we hurt survivors, like just heinous, vile things. We also received harassment over the phone and email. So people were emailing administrators, basically accusing us of anti-Semitism without merit. Like, there was no, there didn't seem to be any provable kind of instance of anti-Semitism that they could actually corroborate. And there was also no investigation up until that point of any, you know, anti-Semitic behaviors by staff at the center. It was just sort of very reactionary. But we in mid-November received a pretty pointed targeted phone campaign. So people started calling our center just one day out of the blue, nonstop. And it was just call after call. You know, the first call was really violent and berating, and it really ramped up from there, where people were calling and saying like, how dare you, you're anti-Semitic. We got calls that were connected to right-wing kind of online media sources, which seemed really strange to me, because it, to me, I'm sort of thinking people are calling us anti-Semitic, but they're getting like a newspaper, an online newspaper that refers to people as globalists, right? to call us and accuse us of these things. It just seemed like, who is organizing this? Because you seem very confused about who your allies are in calling out anti-Semitism. So yeah, the harassment clearly began behind the scenes at the beginning of November, but ramped up to being more of a public spectacle from a few people who had platforms within media as well, who were just saying unsubstantiated, fantastical claims about our center being anti-Semitic. Yeah, it's kind of hard to pinpoint, but I hope that gives you a good idea of the chaos that erupted after one Instagram post.
That gives us an idea as to how coordinated this harassment campaign is. I mean, and it stemmed from one Instagram post, and then it just kind of, based on what you said, started, encompassing in-person harassing visits, right? Phone calls, emails, all using the term safety, but selectively, right? I mean, I know we had talked about this a few weeks prior, but hearing you talk about it again, I can't even imagine the toll that harassment took on all of you. And honestly, I'm horrified and appalled. So then, I wonder, was the university supportive? Were you being invited to share your experiences, or were you facing some silencing when it came to trying to disclose what's been happening?
My first response is to just laugh at the lack of response, just to cope with it. I think I have to find some humor in the lack of support the university had given us. And I think in terms of their response, it's pretty clear they wanted to silence us completely. At some points we weren't allowed to talk publicly about the harassment we faced, or even with each other or the volunteers. From the start, we were told to work from home, so that alone was a way to separate us, so we couldn't talk to each other in person. I don't know what they were thinking that we would be doing, or scheming behind them. All of it is really ridiculous. We were specifically told we weren't allowed to share our personal political beliefs in the workplace too. So many things happened that were just horrible. Our access to our general email and social media was taken away from us. These to me were just all red flags that something more insidious was going on than just, like you said, Ethel, trying to keep us safe in the name of safety. Yeah, something was going on in the university that I think was their way of trying to control and cover the university's reputation and therefore their funding. And yeah, this was not just concerning because of all the silencing and control, but this had real consequences on our clients that we served. Our clients are often, we do crisis intervention work. So a lot of the times, not all the times, but many of our clients come in high states of stress, of experiencing acute trauma symptoms. So lives were at stake, and essential service the university promised that would be there for students and their gender and sexual violence policy was essentially not there. And yeah, even more concerning was the messaging to the university put out saying our support was still available, our drop-in support, even though none of us could provide that support or were told how to, when we weren't given the tools to access our general inbox where a lot of intakes happened, where we weren't given infrastructure or instructions on how to support clients. We never got one referral, I think, in the whole time we were working from home, which was 3 months or something. And that's unheard of in the work we do. So I am very concerned of what was happening there and what support, or if any support, was given to these folks that was adequate, and let alone specialized in sexual violence. Yeah, I think one of our other staff members, we were in a meeting once with university admin, and they said something along the lines of right now I feel colonized in the way that the university is handling this. And that really stuck with me. It was never a place where we were given a chance to explain even our roles at the center or share about the needs of our clients, or we were never given a chance to input on what we needed to navigate the abrupt loss of our director and receiving harassment and like doxing from bad actors. So this was really confusing and stressful for us. And I feel even worse for the volunteers who were left like even more in the dark. And they did the bulk of the work that we did supporting clients, and they didn't even get the bare minimum of support and courtesy from the university. So yeah, I think at the end of the day, like all the messaging around what was happening was very administrative, very hierarchical, was done by the interim director. So clearly their priorities were not to protect staff or volunteers, either to us like in private or public.
Honestly, just listening to you speak about this, I am feeling so angry, because not only were you dealing with harassing emails, phone calls, visits, right? The institutional response or lack thereof is in itself also a form of violence, right? So you're dealing with both sides, right? The institution that's employing you, that's supposed to have your back, seems to me as though, based on what you were saying, when it seems to me as though they were kind of using, again, the buzzword of safety to justify you working from home, right? To justify kind of their draconian actions. And yet it's clear that all of you were like, that's not really our safety. You're pulling something off, right? You're trying to mislead and gaslight us.
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, part of safety is connection, it's relationship, it's open communication and trust and honesty. So I think, yeah, both Saba and Gwen have alluded to the fact that we were told like not to talk about our personal beliefs with coworkers and volunteers, like not even just the campus at wide. Of course, also we were not allowed to do that, but like even with each other. And yeah, like it was ridiculous and so clearly about, you know, silencing us and silencing, you know, what we were doing in support of Palestine, or, you know, in support of students who were advocating, you know, for a ceasefire in Palestine. And so, you know, to me, that's always what it was about. In the very beginning, you know, we did try and speak up about how, you know, the fact that the university is not contradicting any of these baseless claims that the center is not a safe place for Jewish survivors makes it impossible for us to do our work, right? Like if the campus doesn't trust us, like nobody's going to feel safe walking through our doors. And so we tried to speak out about that. We tried to explain, you know, that we can't do our work under these conditions, that, you know, working to end genocide is intimately tied to working to end sexual violence. So of course we're going to talk about this. It doesn't make sense to expect us not to. But yeah, those were conversations we were at least trying to have in the beginning before we realized how dire the situation actually was and was going to continue to be. But yeah, it's you know, they're clearly on one side, they have a very particular agenda and very particular concerns around like the reputation of the U of A. But with us, yeah, that conversation is about, you know, our safety or like trying to get back to normal or trying to make sure that the center is a safe place for survivors, but like not actually following through in a way that would make those claims make sense.
That's horrifying. And I'm kind of, it's clear that this lack of support from the university is being brought on because of the Palestine exception, right? Like, you know, they could talk out of both sides of their mouth again, but it's clear that this is what's happening. I guess it also, just again, talking about safety, whose safety is being centered here then, right? Like the university, even my own, keeps talking about safety. And I'm like, whose safety? Who are you prioritizing? Sabah, who do you think is, whose safety is being talked about here?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, one thing that I didn't touch on when I was talking about the targeting was the thing that was making us the most unsafe, and I'll talk about whose safety is being centered in a second, was essentially that, you know, our center had been the subject of national headlines at this point, and more specifically, you know, one person at our center had been targeted, and I won't speak for her, she's not here today, but, you know, this is a beloved friend and mentor to all of us. This is someone that, you know, I'm confident saying we all care very much about, and being written about in these ways is very unsafe, especially when claims are being made that are unsubstantiated, articles are being written that are not nuanced at all, and very clearly, upon reading them, it feels like you're reading someone's stenography of right-wing grifter talking points, essentially. But now
I love that.
But truly, and it's appearing in, you know, big publications, major national publications. And so, you know, the whose safety was being centered was certainly not ours. It was certainly not the staff's, any former or current staff of the U of A Sexual Assault Center, because, you know, the University of Alberta is an institution with a legal department, a communications department, and a law school. You would think with all of those huge resources at your disposal, you would be able to demand a retraction for an unsubstantiated hit piece on a staff member who provides a vital service and a unit that provides a vital service. But at no point was that ever achieved. At no point was that ever even floated. We brought that up, you know, hey, could you not put out statements on our behalf without our knowledge that insinuate us into anti-Semitism that never occurred by our words or hands? That would be great, you know. We pushed and pushed and pushed, and, like, you know, I really want to give deference to Kit and to Wen for very, very, very much, like, pointedly being like, hey, the university is the president of the university put out a statement essentially announcing that our director had been terminated and essentially apologizing for, you know, anti-Semitism that hadn't occurred, but not really. It was kind of out of both sides of the mouth type of statement, distancing the university from the center and the center from the university, kind of making it seem like we did something bad and they're making it right. The University of Alberta is going to step in and, you know, deal with these unruly radicals, when we hadn't had a single conversation with that man. We hadn't had a single conversation with an administrator who had been there and knows us and who could maybe ask us what had gone on. Like, there was no deference to, hey, you're being targeted online. Maybe we should do something about that other than tell you to go to the employee assistance program. And, like, there was just no concept of the fact that, hey, my family that don't even watch the news are sending me screenshots of articles about my job. You don't think that's becoming dangerous now? You know, there's just no real concept of, like, who's actually unsafe here when these narratives are being pumped out without any form of pushback, any form of, like, protocol. Because you would think that if people were spreading lies about a different, you know, a different faculty of the university would step in and do something to, like, counteract that. But in our case, that didn't happen.
One thing I wanted to ask too is, can you speak a bit about your structural location and the kinds of risks you face? Because faculty and students have different protections. Where are your, like, what does your structural position have to do with, you know, your options right now? Can we kind of unpack that a little bit so our listeners understand, you know, your positionalities and where things stand with you personally? And I think when we started talking about that, like, a few weeks ago when we had that conversation, I wanted to hear from you on this note.
Yeah, definitely. I think what was unique in our position, given the different kind of positions in the university, was that we were support staff rather than academic staff or faculty. So, looping back a little, I think on December 7th, the president, Bill Flanagan of the university, released a statement about freedom of expression at the university. And if you read it, it sounds like that there's, like, great and amazing protections in place for staff at the U of A. But in reality, this was not meant for support staff. It's not like it's been great for academic staff or faculty, but I think it's clear that we as support staff were not afforded the same types of protections, even on that higher level, I guess. Like, when we were being investigated for quote-unquote anti-Israeli sentiment as one of the reasons. I think they gave me another reason of like forcing beliefs on other volunteers or people, which they weren't very clear about. Like our investigation date was started on, I think, October 7th, when the like attack, the Hamas attack happened. I think like Saba was sick that weekend. I don't know why they started even that date. Yeah. And like we were given a completely different reason for our dismissal. They clearly said that it wasn't because it wasn't related to the Israel-Hamas conflict, I think they quoted, in their reasons for firing us. It wasn't that we spoke up about the genocide in Palestine that they like wrote on paper, but the reason they said was that we didn't cooperate with them and we did like insubordination within the investigation. So to me, like it feels like a cover for like we're just gonna fire them for whatever reason we can get. So on paper, at least, I think the university wanted to be able to like point and say, no, it's not because of political reasons that we fired them, but we all got fired within 10 minutes of each other on one day.
Yeah, and I'll jump in there too. You know, the investigation, and we were never told why we were being investigated until the very end. But in the summary report that they sent, you know, it said you were being investigated for allegedly reaching out to volunteers with the purpose of talking about Palestine. And then the reason they gave me in the end for why I was being dismissed, one of the things they said was, you know, the work that you do supporting survivors is so sensitive and it requires so much trust. You know, how could we keep you in this position after you didn't cooperate during the investigation? You know, you've broken trust with us, which to me is just so absurd that like the center has been inoperable for 3 months. Like if this work was so important, this is not how you would have handled the situation. So yeah, it's just, they really, it's so transparent to me. Like it was always about, you know, speaking up about Palestine and the pushback from, you know, those Zionist folks on Twitter. But on paper, it's, yeah, they weren't honest about what they were doing. It was misconduct. It was breaking trust, you know, so that like disconnect between what they're saying and what they're doing was so stark.
I'm so sorry. Like it feels as though they're just kind of, you know, giving you reasons to see what sticks, and you know, and they probably know that you know that these reasons are bullshit, but this is like intimidation tactics that they're using, right? Punitive reasons, you weren't cooperating, you know, and suddenly the language of safety is being deployed against you, right? Like we have to investigate you because, you know, and so it's just, it's so reprehensible. Where do things stand for you now?
Yeah, so we are still working with our union representative to challenge the dismissal. So going through that process, it's a pretty slow process. I think that's just normal. So, you know, we'll see how that goes. And then in terms of, you know, our personal health and well-being, we've gotten lots of support, you know, from friends and family, you know, and other folks on campus who are familiar with what's happened to us. So, yeah, I think we're doing about as okay as I think we could, given what's going on. But I think what we would all love to see more of is folks within the U of A community, you know, students, staff, faculty, sort of trying to figure out what's going on. Like, why doesn't the U of A have a functioning sexual assault center right now? Like, what's going on? Like, asking those tough questions. You know, if you email the sexual assault center, what sort of responses are you getting? Are you being referred to other services outside of the U of A? Are you being referred to services in the U of A who don't specialize in providing support to survivors of sexual violence? You know, how many staff does the U of A have, does the U of A sexual assault center have right now? Why hasn't there been a job posted for the director position? Like you can't, like it's been 3 months now without a director, might be four now. Been a long time without a director, you know, why isn't there a job posting? Basically, yeah, like what is this gap in service? Who's filling it? You know, what's the plan? I think we talked at the beginning about how critical the service was for the campus community and how much, you know, different types of work we did. So yeah, reaching out to folks, you know, like the dean of students, the president, you can even email the interim director, email the center itself, you know, call those numbers, see what's going on. And there are definitely folks doing this work. You know, there's Students Against Sexual Violence. So you can find them on Instagram at SASV_YAG. which is a group of students who are trying to do exactly that, to figure out what's happening, you know, figure out how to get support set up for survivors again. So yeah, that's sort of, I think, what's missing is, you know, there are folks doing that already, but, you know, it'd be great to see a lot more people get on board and try and kind of sleuth out, like, what exactly is happening? Because, you know, from the very beginning, what the university has done versus what the university says it's doing has been very different. So trying to, like, do some information finding around, like, what's actually going on and putting pressure on people to get those supports set back up again.
100%. What are the other things that our listeners can do for support?
Something I will say is that from this entire situation, what I've personally learned, me, Saba, I want to make sure I'm saying this as an individual opinion, is that the University of Alberta does not respond very well to PR nightmares. You can contribute individually in any way that makes sense to you. We were in a unit under what is known as the Dean of Students. So if you were to go on the U of A website, you can find more information about how to contact them. But we also have things like the Sexual Violence Response Coordination Team on the U of A campus and the Office of Safe Disclosure and Human Rights. And I'm sure they'd like to at least hear about perspectives of, like, you know, hey, I'm concerned that there isn't a center on campus anymore. I'm concerned as, like, you know, an academic about the like charter protected right to speech being leveraged against people. Yeah, and if you're in a union as well, never hurts to check in with your union and ask, like, maybe they would like to support our unions. Who knows?
Thank you all so much for sharing space with us. And honestly, you know, there's a lot of us who are rooting for you. So thank you so much for sharing your stories and giving us such important bits of advice on where to go from here. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
What Saba, Wen, and Kit have shared about their experiences is deeply alarming, even if it is not exceptional. University spaces have long been intense sites of repression for any kind of Palestine solidarity work. This Palestine exception to free speech has a well-established playbook of false accusations of anti-Semitism, administrative sanctions, threats to academic freedom, the policing of campus spaces, bureaucratic roadblocks, legislation, and more. But the focus of this repression also shows how important it is that we do not cede the space of the university. Beyond this, Saba, Wen, and Kit also bring to light the imperative work that staff do at the university. As Saba so powerfully reminds us, we never needed the university. The university needed us. The university needed the Sexual Assault Center. But staff, who aren't protected by the guarantees of academic freedom, are at a distinct risk in a climate of repression such as the one we are in. This means that those of us who can must speak out and continue to speak out, but also find ways to work in coalition and strategically leverage what protections we do hold, especially when universities are showing us that they can and will weaponize discourses of safety and security against us, and especially against those of us who keep our universities afloat through our labor every single day. And that's Academic Aunties. Follow us on Twitter at Academic Auntie and at Academic Aunties on Blue Sky or Instagram. And visit our website at academicaunties.com/support to find out all about the ways you can support the pod. This episode was produced by Dr. Anisha Nath, myself, and Wayne Chu. Tune in next time when we talk to more Academic Aunties. Until then, take care, be kind to yourself, and don't be an asshole.